Hey guys, this is the Brothers Wist number 36. It is November 12th, 6 in the afternoon, or at least for me. I guess, Hammy, you're in Central Time, right?
Yep. Central Time, it's the only time to be.
All right, that's Mike Hammett up in Chicago. Very ashamed of all of his sports teams at the moment.
just simply terrible job they did.
Yeah, it's pathetic. Pathetic.
108 years and even went into extra innings.
Yeah.
In the last game.
Here's to another 108 years of nobody watching baseball. Oh, see what I did there? Yeah, in your face.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and then we've also got Thomas Kurnick. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce it correctly. I tried last time and I failed miserably. Do it for us, Thomas.
Tomáš Kurnick.
Ah, that's sexy Slovakian. What time is it over there for you right now, brother?
It's 1 a.m. and some change.
All right. Goodness gracious. That's ridiculous. He does this for you people. Obviously not for me. He doesn't like me that much.
Oh, come on, Greg. You know I love you.
Well.
See, I
you used
say
to
it
say
publicly.
It, right? Used to show it where I should speak louder than words. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. Maybe send me some money. I don't know. Buy me something pretty. So today we've got – it feels like it's been a long time since we talked. I guess the last time we actually kind of supplemented with the Wispapalooza sort of follow-up, so we didn't actually get together and do a chat. Those Wispapalooza ones, man, everybody was jet-lagged, and I was in a hotel about to go to Nanog 68, so everybody was a little tired. And except for Tom. He can always talk, but that's just Tom. So we've actually got a lot of news between then and now, so it's mostly going to be just – news, a little bit of stuff here and there. You know how we always do, always squeezing something good in between. So obviously there was an election here in the States, but we're not going to talk about it until Tom Smith gets here, because it will be so much more fun with Tom. maybe that's a cast unto itself, where Tom just talks at everyone about his political views and how much he loves Hillary Clinton. It's an unnatural level of love he has for her. So,
yeah, it's I always hear at like different conferences where people are talking about, you know, their favorite parts are all the tangents and all the odd things that we discuss. You know, not so much the hardcore tech, although, you know, that certainly has its place. That would definitely be purely entertainment value. No technical knowledge to be gained whatsoever. Just to watch Tom react.
Do his thing. Yeah, it almost makes you feel better about yourself, right? If you see somebody else do so terribly, like, wow, I'm not that bad off. Yeah, I could always be Tom, and he is insane. Nah, we love Tom. He's good fun. So let's jump right in. So Hammy obviously is the best source of information for us. He's always killing it on the Facebook post. So if you guys haven't liked the Brothers Wist Facebook page, you should jump on there. He's putting stuff up nearly daily, and occasionally some of it's actually pretty decent. So I would say jump on there and get you some of that stuff. So the first one on our list is the Trango Hidden Root account. So tell us a little bit about this, Mike.
Someone shared on one of the email lists a link to a blog post that went up. Looks like 2 days ago, where this guy, actually I don't even know if it's a guy, this person stumbled across a hidden Trango root account for Trango's point-to-point radios. They do mostly licensed radios. They have a couple unlicensed 24 gigahertz, and then they came out with a 5 gig platform a couple of years ago. It may not have gone anywhere, I'm not sure. But Trango's claim to fame is they were the first vendor out there to really bring low cost licensed wireless for WISPs. The numbers could be off, but at the time, a licensed link was like $250,000 to buy something that wasn't even all that great. And then Tringo came out at like $20,000, just knocked the socks off. And then now, because of them and then others that had to obviously catch up to still be in the game, now $20,000 buys you one of the high end, you know, 4x4 MIMO licensed wireless links. So it's they've definitely had a huge impact on the market, and the product is generally pretty good. But you know, they kind of give the story on the blog post, which we'll have in the show notes. I gotta read it to you, but basically he you know, chronicles his story of what he was doing to discover this you know, root account. You know, he took some firmware, saw that it was just a basic Linux file system, so he mounted it, started poking around in there, and you mentioned somewhere how he got the idea of the password to try in the first place.
It looks like he found a hash password and tried to brute force it for a little while, got no play out of that, so he looked, he found FTP credentials for their software update services, and then pulled a bunch of old packages, and then found the root password in plain text there. Looks like he did the right thing and notified Tringo, but he said that that root only worked on older devices, and that this vulnerability still exists for all of their devices. It's just got a different root password set. So it doesn't sound like it's unique per device or anything like that. So I guess it would be unfortunate if somebody actually did figure out what this password was. And so to me, this is interesting because it's kind of how like the Mariah botnets are sort of working now, those DDoS engines, right, where they find some kind of root credentials in webcams or DVRs or something like that, and then just add them to the fold and start attacking people with them. So not to say that this has been exploited, but if you've got an old Tringo device out there, right, this guy was able to find it plain text root password, that means there's going to be some of this stuff that's publicly IP'd and accessible that's susceptible to it. So, it's interesting. Make sure you block that outside access to your stuff.
And actually, this was just today that this was made public. And there's a Tringo engineer that commented on that email discussion list. He clarified a few points, and of course, people are telling him what they should be doing, whether they're correct and what they're changing going forward, or whether other people are correct and what they should be doing. But they kind of explain a couple things, and then, you know, say that they're working on fixing the issue. But obviously, if you don't update your firmware, then it doesn't really matter. If your devices are exposed to the public, it doesn't really matter. And
even if they're not exposed to the public, it can be used to an internal attack as well.
Like, you know, if you get some Java or Flash, you know, vulnerability that gets exploited, they drop something on your computer, and then your computer gets it. You know, it's, you know, I mean, obviously not being public is the first, you know, first good measure, but.
Yeah, it makes me wonder about these botnets, right? The way they spread, you get root access into a little Linux file system. At what point will these things then start trying to attack the internal networks that they sit on, right? And turn them into whatever, you know, or try and exploit vulnerabilities, right? So it's just sort of a matter of time. If you get one webcam on the inside of your network that gets exploited, and then, you know, they've got internal access, they can start trying to bang away at your infrastructure, so... It's a matter of time.
Just a snowball, and usually things like even NVRs or DVRs, those tend to be, you know, people tend to put those into management subnets, which then those management subnets then end up having actual access to the rest of the network, if those people even have firewalls at all. I mean, that's another discussion unto itself, but still, just a manufacturer doing something like that is unacceptable.
Yeah, and even then, say it's an older version of equipment that they aren't releasing firmware for. This is me speaking out of turn. I don't know for a fact that they aren't updating this equipment, but I'm assuming there's something old sitting out there that has the old default root password that can't be updated, right? There's probably something that's end of life that they're just not supporting anymore that's vulnerable. So in that instance, you don't really have any options other than to try and lock it down as much as you can. Interesting. All right, so let's keep on trucking. Just a little update. There's no link to this one, but Mike found out that the Wisp Router guy closed up shop not too long ago.
I had thought I'd seen LinkedIn tell me that he got a new job. I'm like, oh, well, you know, maybe he's just, you know, moonlighting or something. But then I saw on Facebook that he was in a completely different part of the country. I'm like, what's he doing there? And then, he said, and then someone was talking to him and said that he moved. I'm like, well, he moved, like, moved away from his company? Let's go to the website. And I got like a 302 error. Hmm. Well, that's strange. Just went to the archive.org and just started, when did this last work? And it was apparently back in March.
Interesting.
So apparently he's been gone for a while. And he had a Wisp. He was actually the first distributor I ever bought anything from for my Wisp 12 years ago. Just disappeared.
Yeah, he's one of the old timers. I'm surprised. If he was completely closing up shop, why didn't he sell that domain name to one of the other distributors, you know, try and get a little bit left out of it?
Maybe that's why it's just sitting there 302. So someone say, hey, it's broke. Hey, you know, maybe I'll, it's kind of an indirect advertisement. Hey, I'm not using it anymore. Who wants to pay me?
Yeah, end of an era, man. Crazy. All right, so trucking right along, we also now have buy cells supporting VXLAN. I don't know how many WISPs would be able to actually take advantage of this immediately. Buy cells, fairly new player in the market, right?
Yeah, I think they just started shipping. Well, it was less than a year ago, but I think I'd seen them at a couple shows before that, even under a different name, because they were Chinese, well, still are. But then they had like a U.S. distributor for some older stuff, I think. So they've been around for a couple, for maybe a couple of years, but you know, they really only hit the big stage the past 6 months to a year. So there's not going to be a lot of gear out there, but it's probably one of the hotter gears. That doesn't make any sense.
Nor do you most of the time, but we get the gist of it. I smell what you're cooking.
But yeah, I think it's probably one of the cheaper LTE platforms. And they actually have a pretty good team going for them. Rick Harnish, formerly Wisp executive director. Yeah. Patrick Leary, he's been in the industry since the late 90s, I think.
All names everybody recognizes, I suppose.
So they're Wilson was watching their webcast they had the other day, and they were talking about supporting VXLAN. I'm assuming soon. I assume it's not in current shipping firmware, but so then that reinvigorated. I remember Thrift asking MikroTik for VXLAN support and a few other things, and so they go dig up those threads and bump those threads. And
all right. So for the uninitiated like myself, VXLAN stands for Virtual Extensible LAN, and in my layperson's understanding, it's a VLAN-ish encapsulation for layer 2, wraps it in a UDP packet, and shoots it across a network, so it's kind of layer 2, right?
What is the like the important thing about VXLAN is that it's distributed using multicast, and actually this is why it's strange to me that a transit equipment, because you know this you would usually use as the transit equipment or a transit tier in your network, and it's kind of strange that it actually supports VXLAN, which is mostly a data center centric technology. So I almost wonder if somebody paid them specifically to develop and implement that, because on the list of technologies that you want this kind of equipment support, or this kind of equipment to support, VXLAN is I personally wouldn't say really a high priority feature to have. So it's to me, it's kind of interesting that they chose to actually support it.
And this is probably going to go more to my ignorance of LTE, but doesn't LTE sort of, whenever it terminates a client at a tower, doesn't it create like a GRE tunnel back to a centralized concentrator and then pop everybody out there? Isn't that normally how it does it? I'm entirely unsure.
I believe it does tunnel everything back to what they term is the LTE core.
There you go.
That does, it's kind of the brains of the whole operation. And
so would this so be VXLAN taking the place of the tunneling protocol that it's currently using?
It could be. It could be.
Yeah.
And then, yeah,
so, but what maybe what originally VXLAN was developed for, it was for stretching layer 2 segments across layer 3 infrastructure for like basically geolocated data centers that still require direct layer 2 connectivity.
Yeah.
It's kind of a, almost, you could think of it almost as VPLS. It's not the same technology at all, but almost originally intended for the same purpose, to stretch layer 2 segment across a differently routed, or in case of VPLS, label signaled path.
Right.
So that was the original intention of the protocol, and that's why it requires an underlying IP connectivity, and it requires multicast, so you can actually distribute a VLAN over multicast to multiple locations, and you stretch layer 2 across potentially huge routed networks. So that was the original intention of VXLAN, and these days people use it for all kinds of things, but it's, to me, it's still interesting that they chose for, you know, for LTE equipment to support it.
Yeah, the, I mean, you know, most WISP infrastructure is traditionally routed, and if LTE needs that layer 2 transport between its access point and the core, you know, I guess this is a tool to do that, and perhaps a little more gracefully than, you know, nailing up EOIP tunnels or something like that.
For sure.
Perhaps.
All right. So moving right along. Interesting, but I'm not sure it's extremely applicable at this point. Let's see. So Mike has a note about Cambium EPMP to support Mac Telnet, Mac SSH. I don't know anybody else that, well, I think, what was it, the edge routers, the Ubiquiti edge router? I think at some point you could put a Mac Telnet package on that guy to be able to support Mac Telnet, but I think this is the
and
only...
You still can, because there is actually a open source Mac Telnet server and Mac Telnet client. So theoretically, you can put it on anything that's Linux, and that you have direct access to the underlying Linux system to. So theoretically, Mac Telnet client and Mac Telnet server can be put anywhere.
Gotcha. So, but I guess this is going to be the first other, I guess, quote-unquote, access point, CPE, that's going to be supporting Mac Telnet right out of the box? Is that the
Yeah.
And one could conspiracy theory that they could just be going through the list of Ubiquiti feature requests, because I know that was asked for probably 8 years ago from Ubiquiti, and they never had any interest in doing it. Cambium probably saw that and said, hey, that's interesting, we should do that. And did it. And so, no, yeah, you know, and that, and, you know, on the mailing list, I've seen that people, you know, they have used it. It's still kind of an early beta thing. It doesn't always work quite right between certain things, but, you know, they did Mac Telnet, and then now they've even gone as far as Mac SSH, so that they have a secure connection, not just plain text.
Gotcha. And so for the uninitiated, Mac Telnet is a traditionally MikroTik technique where you can connect to a router and via layer 2, you can connect to another MikroTik, right? So say you're making network changes and you break layer 3 routing, you can still actually connect to that remote side, connect into that access point, connect into that router, connect to whatever it happens to be, and fix whatever you just did. I can't tell you how many times I've done this. And save the day, an unexpected change, or maybe you hit a bug or anything like that, and you can still backdoor into this equipment. Is that a fair assessment, Thomas?
Oh, yeah. So it's very, very useful.
Yeah.
saves your life a lot of
so
time.
Many times.
These days, MicroTik has Roamon, which is pretty much Mectalnet on steroids, and I would really recommend anybody to check out Roamon. It's even more awesome.
So is Roamon just
of
using
MicroTik?
Is Roamon just using the Mectalnet, or is it like actually something different?
Roamon is actually an entire proprietary layer 2 routing forwarding protocol from MicroTik. And it can do things like management connection proxying, topology discovery, and all kinds of very useful stuff. For example, you can connect to one MicroTik, and then you can do a topology discovery, which will basically go through your entire network and discover all the MicroTiks in your entire network, but you're still just connected to one, and it's not dependent on any IP connectivity on anything else. And of course, you could argue that it's a proprietary protocol that does who knows what and what the security is and etc. And that's a debate for other days as well.
I mean, talk about the Microsoft operating system, right? It's a proprietary closed system, and we entirely trust everything to it. So, you know, at some point, you've got to trust everybody.
But Roamon is actually really great, and it's like the next evolution of Mectalnet, I would say.
So Mectalnet is you can say Winbox into a router, and then you can CLI into an adjoining router, right?
You have to hop across layer 2 segments. You can only connect with Mectalnet to what is directly on your layer 2 segment.
Right. But Mectalnet is CLI only, right? Whereas Roamon, you can actually use Winbox to connect to all of these other devices.
And also, there is no layer 2 segment anymore because it's a proprietary layer 2-ish routing protocol. It actually jumps across your entire network.
So you can use it
for CLI, Winbox.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, if you've got external access to, say, the border router, and then you've got 10 access points inside that, say, don't even have IP addresses on them, you can still Winbox via Roamon into that border router that you have external access to, and then in turn kind of proxy through and Winbox into the other guys. It's pretty neato.
It's very nice, and you don't need to expose those devices which are behind the edge router to any kind of access from the outside at all, and you don't need to deal with NAT or anything. It's really nice.
Yeah. I suppose it's going to be pretty hard for somebody to try and break into a router that doesn't even have an IP address assigned to it. Let's see.
I'm going to say crack Roamon.
Well, from the outside, Roamon actually exposes what you already have exposed. It's Winbox, right, from the outside. So I guess you could argue that it's not any less secure than already having Winbox itself exposed to the outside.
True story. All right, so let's talk about a little bit of telecom news. And it goes from bad to worse, I would assume. We've got Thomas's story at the very end of it. So let's see. Right off the top of the list, something that's near and dear to my heart is CenturyLink is acquiring Level 3 for $34 billion, billion with a B, in cash. And it just made my stomach turn sour when I thought of that. So this is going to come as no shock to anyone that Level 3's support is bad and their network infrastructure is getting worse. So Level 3 at some point, I can't remember how long ago it was, they acquired Global Crossing, right? So now they have two networks and they still never entirely integrated them. Well, then they went ahead and bought Time Warner Telecom, and so now they have three networks. And anybody who's familiar with Level 3, they call them different colors. It's like red, blue, and orange or something like that. And anytime it crosses a color boundary, they have to engage a different department, and it's just crazy, and customer service has gone to pot. You know, it's just everything is just so segregated, and everybody seems to be so siloed. It's just a horrible experience. So what do they think? You know, they were sitting around in a room. What could we do to improve the experience? Let's add a fourth network onto it. Let's sell to CenturyLink. And you can tell I'm a little salty about it still. I actually worked as much Level 3 out of my networks as I possibly could, and I picked up CenturyLink as an alternate, and now here's CenturyLink acquiring Level 3. So it's going to be four networks, I'm sure, entirely disconnected. What's your take on this, Mike? Do you see this as a good thing? I don't see it as a positive step forward.
Is it four? Did they ever actually finish any of their other acquisitions? I know at one point they had like six acquisitions in concurrently that they were trying to integrate, and it was just a massive hell for years because they just kept buying people and never finishing the integrations before they bought somebody else.
Yeah, and Honestly, I guess those other networks weren't big enough to actually get a color, right?
Okay. So. No, it's absolutely terrible. And not so much terrible from... I mean, it's always terrible when you have two large networks, because CenturyLink, for those that don't know, CenturyLink is a small, but was a small American rural phone company that through, apparently not legally because it's still happening, but through apparent overuse, abuse, whatever, of the funding that the FCC doles out to rural phone companies. They kept buying and buying and buying, and then they purchased Qwest, which had a substantial international network.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Like, CenturyLink was so tiny, and they swallowed massive Qwest. And because they're still on the government dole, they bought Level 3. So you have a rural phone company, which is absolutely the worst when it comes to getting anything done, anything pro-consumer. Rural phone companies are terrible. And then now they just bought the largest international fiber network that there is. And like, I was hoping that they would stay on their own path, Level 3, that is. They finally got to profitability for the first time in like 15 years. A couple of years ago, so much so that CenturyLink actually gets a $10 billion tax credit that Level 3 had built up over all their 15 years of losses. So that could have been what they bought. They bought the tax credit. It's just terrible.
Yeah, I had totally forgotten that CenturyLink bought Qwest 4 or 5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And
it was CenturyTel, and now it's CenturyLink, but yeah, whatever.
And Qwest was mostly fiber, right? Mostly long haul fiber. I think they got their start running fiber and tracks. Weren't they owned by like somebody who owned UPACs or something like that?
Yeah, they were. Well, then there was US West, which was one of the for those outside of America, you're not going to really know what's going on here, but when AT&T was broken up in the 84, there's a whole bunch of little, you know, mini AT&Ts across the country, and then one of those was US West. Watch, well, there was a couple other ones before that, but I don't know all of it. But that was US West, which was a local phone company in the kind of, I'd say, northwest portion of the United States. And then they merged with Qwest. I think it was called Qwest at the time, who had, you know, built out a fiber network in the, you know, dot-com days and had no money. And actually, there was a discussion about, before this was official, as to what was going to happen. And I guess Qwest, a bunch of the Qwest network was 20-year IRUs on the original Level 3 build. And perhaps Qwest bought Level 3 so that they wouldn't have to renegotiate on their 20-year IRUs for the bulk of their network. So another conspiracy theory. But at nearly the same time as this happens, CenturyLink, which had been rumored for a long time to be selling their data centers, sold their data centers for $2 billion. I don't know who bought them. I don't think it really matters. It wasn't anybody that we know about. I think it was some private equity companies. But yeah, we have a whole bunch of acquisitions here. The past 2 weeks has been just phenomenal for telecom acquisitions.
Yeah, beyond that, Crown Castle buys FPL. That's Florida Power and Light, their fiber network. I know they were huge in Florida, obviously, Florida Power and Light. but I know they've been aggressively expanding, which was really weird because they were doing a lot of build out and a lot of it was spec build. They didn't even have anything that they were trying to necessarily light up, and they've been trying to go into a lot of data centers. I know a couple of mine they've been building into, and I'm assuming that stuff's because they're going to go through, which I thought was really interesting. It's because I was just, you know, when they said we're going to spec build in here, I was like, seriously? You sure about that? You know, because it's like it just doesn't happen anymore. Nobody speculatively builds in anything. So those guys were going gangbusters, and I wonder if they were trying to land grab for this deal. Obviously, this deal was already, you know, in negotiations at this point, so I wonder if that was part of it, right? And that was a $1.5 billion purchase, too.
Yeah, and then I'm waiting for the network map to load up. Obviously Florida, and then they've got a lot in Texas, and then they actually do go all the way up to New York. I would imagine that a lot of that extension outside of the Texas area in Florida is probably just IRUs off of one person or another. Hmm. But you know, being a power company, you know, they probably had friendly deals with other power companies to use their right of way. That's probably how they build, you know, build so much network so easily. And then, you know, for those that don't know, Crown Castle is, I believe, the largest tower owner in the world. And the past couple of years, they have been buying fiber networks because the cell companies, you know, are. You know, they've moved beyond T1s and, you know, Ethernet services, wavelengths, you know, now they're buying, you know, dark fiber to all of their towers. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, Crown just trying to capture, you know, more money out of their existing clients because, you know,
trying to stay relevant.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, there's only so many new cell companies coming online, so they can't grow their, you know, services too much that way, so they're trying to find other ways of growing revenue, and fiber to the tower it is.
Do you see this as positive or neutral or negative?
Nothing Crown Castle does is positive. they might be worse than CenturyLink in terms of how a company treats their customers.
Alright, fair enough.
If you're not one of the big cell companies.
Gotcha.
A lot of, you know, they've done a lot of tower acquisitions over the years, a lot of WISP, you know, great contracts with the preceding company. And there's been so many stories of WISPs that filed, that, you know, got the new price for the tower, you know, once their lease was up, said, no, thank you. I filed to cancel my contract at the end of the term. And, They look for any possible I that wasn't dotted or T that's not crossed to reject your notice, not tell you until after the new contract has begun, and then say, okay, well, here's your new price. Now you're in a new 10-year contract at this ridiculous price.
Bam. That sucks.
And, I mean, they will eventually let you out. It just takes you a lot of lawyers, time, and money. And,
gotcha.
You know.
So they're trying to make it painful enough to where you'll just, you know what, forget it. I'll just ride this one out and be done with it. That sucks.
But thankfully, the people I know that one of the other fiber acquisitions, it seems to be that they're kind of running the fiber stuff for now. But I assume at some point, Crown Castle is going to let their corporate morality descend to the fiber guys, and that'll be worthless.
I'll take over that portion. All right, so you've also on the list got private equity buys out Inteliquent. Tell me about that one.
At Inteliquent was, okay, there's a company called Neutral Tandem, mm-hmm. and for anybody that knows what the phone network is like, you have your central office that's in your town, and then you have a tandem switch which connects all of your local towns in your area, aggregates them all together, and then that's where your long-distance companies connect to your region. Those are almost always ran by one of the, you know, AT&T or, you know, ex-AT&T companies, you know, be it Verizon, Frontier, CenturyLink, so on. And those companies are terrible. At this point, I'm sure all of the wireless vendors are glad that we're not talking about wireless, because I'm just saying how every vendor's terrible this whole cast. So then they're terribly priced, terrible to work with. So Neutral Tandem formed their own tandem network. It's not universal, so you still have to go back to the incumbent phone companies at some point for some of those calls, but it was just kind of a bunch of companies got fed up with working with them, and so like all the cable companies, cellular companies, a lot of the VoIP companies, all Neutral Tandem customers to avoid working with the incumbent phone company unless they have to. And then they bought a European international fiber network several years ago, renamed themselves Inteliquent because it was no longer just tandem phone switches. And then a couple years later, GTT bought the IP network out of that. So Inteliquent was now just Neutral Tandem again. And now they're not Inteliquent anymore. Same people that bought Zayo's VoIP network bought these guys up.
Okay. Is this positive, neutral, or negative? What do you say that is?
I would say neutral. I don't know enough about it. I mean, it's not a, like, it's kind of a horizontal move, I guess. You know, there's, it's not a really hot market, so nobody really cares too much. You know, any acquisition is probably a negative unless the company is going out of business anyway. But yeah, so there's that.
I gotcha. All right, let's keep trucking, man. We've got a lot of these. We've got Windstream buys Earthlink. And I know Earthlink, everybody knows them. Well, I don't know if everybody still knows them, but they used to be a dial-up ISP, right? This, I guess that's where most people, I think, would know them from. But they also operated a lot of fiber optic networks to connect all that stuff together. And I think that's the piece that still exists, and I'm assuming that's what they acquired, right?
Yeah, over the past several years, Earthlink actually hung around significantly longer than any of the other dial-up companies did. You know, if you name any other dial-up companies, they're still in business.
AOL.
owned by Verizon.
Awesome.
No, but so the Earthlink started going into, they started buying, you know, fiber networks. Delta Telecom or Deltacom from the Southeast was one of them. There's a few others. They bought some data centers and other managed services. And then over the past year or two, they started spinning things off again. You know, their run at it was done. They couldn't make enough money doing it. And so, you know, the value was no longer building the company, but splitting it out. And, oddly enough, Windstream, again, another one of those rural phone companies that used government money to buy other networks to become much bigger than they were. Although not nearly as bad as the other ones.
I've had good ish interactions with Windstream so far. And I know they've been, at least in the Texas market, they've been making some acquisitions, not always huge. There was Phonoscope? Paytech. They bought Paytech not too long ago, right?
Paytech was a national network. They themselves had bought some other networks. McLeod was one of them. McLeod was a big fiber builder in the 80s and 90s. There's a few other companies that they had bought as well. I can't remember all of them.
Yeah.
But they're really, like, you go to the website, you can download a KMZ of their network. And it has all of their, well, there's different KMZs for the fiber network, for the IP network, for their lit buildings, their data centers. All that information is available.
That's cool.
So it's really great to plan things around, to see where somebody is. You're not going to a sales guy and saying, I want service here, and leave you some ridiculous price, wasting your time because their network's nowhere by you.
Yeah.
it's they're great from that aspect.
Yeah, their sales team has been pretty solid as far as my experience goes.
Yeah, yeah. The, you know, I work with them somewhat regularly on different things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've been talking to the Pixel Factory, those guys up in Virginia, and Windstream's been giving them some pretty solid pricing deals, and they've been having some really good success with them. So I've been hearing good things. Good things.
Yeah, the you know, sales guys are there when you need them, and they're not there when you don't. It's pretty good.
All right, so tell me about GTT buying Hibernia and Lumos buying Clarity. Let's lump those together. Sure. A couple
sure.
more.
So the former GTT Teleqent thing was partially brought up because GTT now also bought Hibernia. Tom uses them as an upstream. Hibernia runs a few trials. They just turned a new one up last year. It's the lowest latency transatlantic cable. It's currently out there. Some of that was, and some of their existing ones were former, I believe, 360 networks builds. But then Hibernia themselves, a few years ago, they decided that just owning a transatlantic cable wasn't good enough. So they bought a couple IP networks. They got into the financial transport stuff. So they have, through, you know, buying leased services or RUs from other networks, they have a fairly international network as well. And so GTT picked those guys up. Say that's probably a neutral. GTT seems to be buying some pretty decent people and generally not destroying them along the way.
Gotcha. So let's add some speculation in here, because that's always the more fun part, sure. I think, for me and other people, especially because you have such a different perspective on things than I do. And this is for you too, Thomas. So everybody's buying everybody, all this Pac-Man action's happening. What's the motivator? Like, why, in your opinions, why do you think this is happening and why now?
I would say that one good reason is that buying somebody else who's making money is a lot easier than figuring out how to make money on your own.
Well, I mean, yeah, right. It's always a good way to expand, right? So if you're trying to expand into a market, you're maybe cash flow positive and you need to reinvest that somehow, right? You could expand your network by purchasing somebody else. Or if you want to go into a new market, you buy that market, right? But CenturyLink acquiring Level 3, they were already pretty big at this point, you know, with their acquisitions of Quest and all of their other stuff. Something I had heard, and this is me regurgitating somebody else's opinion, was that that a lot of these transport guys are going to be consolidating because kind of the old paradigm was if you wanted to get anywhere, you had to buy transport to get there. Well, now it's sort of the landscape's different. Now we're just trying to buy access to content, right? At least in the ISP world, all of our people, right? So like in the biz, we just call them eyeballs, right? We have a lot of eyeballs and we're looking for the content. And so you're going to try and go to just specific content providers. So the transit guys aren't necessarily selling transit from point A to point B like they used to. It's just, how do I get to the content really quick? And so they're theoretically maybe getting cut out of a lot of that business they use. And who uses MPLS anymore, right? So I think Level 3 and CenturyLink and Windstream, these guys used to have big MPLS networks where they'd sell you a lot of those connections. But like SD-WAN or say just using DMVPN, because the internet's gotten fairly reliable, I see a lot of people using that as opposed to going to the really expensive MPLS networks that used to be able to acquire off of there. So it just seems like maybe their margins are shrinking because of things like that, and this is what you do. Like whenever you're down, you can buckle down and kind of try and weather the storm, or you can sell, right? I don't know. That's just me spitting stuff out. What do you think, Thomas? Any validity to any of that?
I honestly don't know enough about the U.S. provider and transit landscape and all these companies to have any opinions. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. What do you think, Mike? Does that hold water?
Yeah, because you've got, and then, you know, to kind of go a little further with that, you've got the big content guys, Facebook, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, you know, a lot of the content before was separate networks, and there still is a ton of content in separate networks, you know, your network, you know, your data center, Greg, obviously, you exist because of that, of people not being with Google and Amazon and so on. But so much of the content is going that way, though, that, and these guys are demanding such capacity that they're buying their own dark fiber everywhere. And so then it's just get it to the nearest Microsoft node, and they take it from there.
Yeah, true story. So instead of having just like two data centers that you might happen to have your content at, where you're having to transport everybody from everywhere to get there, now you're sort of geolocated, right, in all these different markets, and so you don't necessarily need transport to get from those data centers back to your stuff. That makes sense. Yeah. All right. So recently, as in last week, I think, our friend Thomas fell off the face of the earth for a little while. As far as the internet goes, I guess pretty much literally, you disappeared. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that story?
So, see how you talk about all these nice big companies and mergers, and I don't even know what any of those companies are, because we have entirely different problems here in Slovakia. what happened to us, actually it was beginning of this week, and I think it was Monday, is that historically we have had huge problems getting any kind of a diversified upstream in my city. And basically my city in Slovakia is the last city, like a proper bigger-ish city in Slovakia, and then there is just Ukrainian borders and Ukraine, and geography.
These
days. And geographically, we are actually in a big valley between two mountain ranges, I guess. So it's our city, and there is a set of smaller villages, towns, whatever you want to call it, and then there is the Ukrainian border. And historically, we had problems getting any other transit than Slovak Telecom, because Slovak Telecom was the only proper what you would call transit here. These days it's actually a bit better, so we actually have three upstream providers or three upstream transits, simply because of reliability. So it turns out having three different upstream providers, it's not enough in Slovakia, because on Monday what happened is that somebody took an excavator to a optical junction point, and as it turns out, all three of our upstreams were actually using that single optical junction point, and therefore even with triple redundancy, our entire city and everything that's after us all the way to the Ukrainian borders was completely cut off the internet. Phone services, landlines went down, mobile services for the T-com, which is Slovak Telecom, Deutsche Telekom, T-com, it's the same thing, right? So mobile services, cell services for those went down, post office closed, bank closed, ATMs weren't working, POS systems weren't working. So basically, that was a lot of fun.
So you guys basically just shut down, right?
Yeah, everything just shut down. SANET, which is the Slovak Academic Network, and DUD, which is the new project, which basically connects all the schools to, the school attendance systems, the grading systems, the digital educational content system, those guys completely shut down as well. So even schools were just, it just shows you really nicely how without data these days, nothing works anymore.
And it's just, what's crazy to me is I try and imagine, like my town here, I live in College Station in Texas, imagine my city just falling off the face of the earth like that. It's just, it's like unthinkable. Like I can't imagine how that could possibly, I mean, it would take so much kung fu to make us fall. I mean, I guess it wouldn't, but it would. It'd have to be a very coordinated thing where you'd have to find a lot of different fiber points and then take them all out, not just a single excavator ticket. So how long did it take before you guys restored services over there?
So this was a huge surprise to us as well, because we really honestly thought with three separate, different, completely unrelated upstream providers, we would be okay. But yeah, it's just mind-boggling how a single excavator and a single optical junction point can bring down. And so yes, what happened is actually that our tertiary upstream provider came back first, and that was about 8 hours after the original outage, and then it slowly started picking up from there.
That's crazy. So I know in the data center world, we go to pretty great lengths to make sure that we have as diverse connectivity as possible, right? So whenever we're pulling connections from a carrier...
That's what we originally did.
Right? Well, we go to the point of, or at least I do, of saying, okay, you're going to connect me. What node are you connecting to? What's the route your fiber takes? And then, so every carrier, I know where their fiber path is heading out my door. And then are they redundant? You know, because some will pull in redundantly into our building that has a ring that goes around to... Anyway, and so I have to make sure that carriers don't take similar fiber paths out, you know, in different directions and stuff like that. And I guess you can only go so far with
that. What's funny is that, as I mentioned, historically for us it has been even worse, because even 3 years ago we only had Slovak Telecom, nothing else. There was simply no other company that brought you high enough speeds at decent enough prices. There were like some private networks that were just way out of range, like the Slovakian power company, which is the, you know, countrywide power company, has their own private network, but good luck getting on there, right? And so actually what happened 3 years ago is there was a very similar situation where we were disconnected from the world for about a day because of a landslide that tore a fiber optic cable. But you know, since then we thought we were better off, but no.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, if you don't have any options, what are you going to do, right?
Yeah, exactly, and that's the entire problem. We don't have simply any other options.
Yeah, it's I'm pretty good with finding fiber. You know, I've got hundreds and hundreds of networks in my GIS program, and I can, you know, zoom in and okay, you know, here's the route for this, here's the route for that, and if I don't have that for a network, I can figure out, you know, they're generally in this area. I remember like a year or two ago, you know, he's going on about, you know, just having shit for options and prices and everything. And I'm like, well, I'll find something for you. I spent like 6 hours looking. No, I couldn't find anything anywhere near him. There's nothing there.
And I think, I mean, being in a somewhat fiber rich area, I take that for granted, I think, you know, so it's like my infrastructure happens to be, but I know a lot of the guys listen to this, I'm sure most of them are in the States, but WISPs generally are rural guys, right? They're out in the middle of nowhere, so they probably find themselves in a lot of the same situations where there just aren't a lot of options, right? So what are you gonna do? You know, you can only add so much redundancy so far, you know. I guess if you had an endless budget, you could do something, but who's got that, you know?
Yeah, pull your own fiber optic cable 500 kilometers to the nearest decent data center exchange.
Ugh.
Yeah. I was just looking up to see how far it was, and yeah, 500 kilometers from you to the only major pop in your country.
So basically, our country has two IXs. One is in Bratislava, which is the capital, and the other is in Košice, which is the second biggest city in Slovakia. But the funny thing is, the one in Košice has only 3 peers, so, and the Slovak Telecom is not even on there, so as soon as you don't have that, you are pretty much, it's not even worth going there. So yeah, it's a completely different situation here.
Your host.
For us Americans, that's about 310 miles.
Yeah, so that's the nearest good IX.
And so that's like, I'm guessing Chicago to Pittsburgh, maybe?
Yeah, that's a pretty long way.
We have only one real option. Yeah, it's actually slightly longer than Chicago to Pittsburgh to be really only one place you can go to get fiber from.
I guess we take what we have here for granted a lot.
But, you know, go west in Europe and it's a lot more like it is here, but
yeah.
Oh yeah, like if you keep going to Germany, then there's very decent infrastructure, but these, you know, post-communistic Middle and Eastern Europe countries, we are still have a way to go.
Gotcha. So you guys are back online, and I'm sure you had to apologize to a lot of people. I'm sure it was no surprise to everyone, though, right? It's like it's everything actually, shuts down.
Yeah, everything shuts down. And it's actually funny because schools which have the Slovakian Academic Network, which is now DUD, they get their backup from us. And it was really funny explaining to them why their primary is down and their backup is down. So, you know, it's just fun situations.
Yeah, that's an act of
God. I thought it was really funny.
All right, that's Jesus take the wheel. He was driving a backhoe that day. Let's see. let's truck on. Let's talk about a little bit of hardware stuff, right? So it was recently announced, I think as of last week or the week before, Broadcom is acquiring Brocade, which is interesting, right? Broadcom being this huge chip manufacturer everybody knows and loves. They've got a lot of chips, a lot of ASICs, right, in switches and things like that. And so from what I understand, they acquired Brocade to get their fiber channel line, right? The fiber channel stuff. I guess some people think it might be dying to like iSCSI or whatever, or NFS, you know, just over network shares or what have you. But I don't think it's completely dead, and until they ride it into the ground, it's just going to be a cash cow for them. It looks like they're carving off all of the IP assets, right? So all of the routing, all of the Brocade had previously bought Foundry, and so all of the Foundry product line, they're selling that stuff off. They had just recently acquired Ruckus, and they're going to be selling that off as well. I'm guessing they'll bundle all that stuff together. Do you think they'll spin that out into just into a new company, or do you think somebody's going to purchase that? Or
So like, there's a lot of companies that could use a good, solid wireless platform like Ruckus, but you know who's going to do it? I couldn't speculate who would be a buyer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're buying the IP, right? All of their antenna design, all of the proprietary stuff they happen to have inside their radios. You're picking all that stuff up. I don't know. I don't even know who would want to pick that stuff up. It seems like you could spin that off and just start selling stuff, I guess. Start selling Foundry again.
To me, this is rather strange because even with Ruckus, right, Ruckus and Xclaim, even that whole situation, right? So actually with this, Xclaim goes as well, and who knows where. But it's really strange because it's a company that makes money. We know it makes money. It's a really good equipment, right? Ruckus has really good reputation in the wireless world as well. Xclaim these days is also really trying to get some market share. And Brocade and Foundry and everything, these are well-known, well-established brands that I would say people like and buy, right? So it's really interesting that they want to just cut that out. And I guess they really just really want that fiber channel stuff, but I personally don't like this situation much.
It well, Brocade chips are in a lot of switches, so maybe they're trying to mitigate some of the backlash of, you know, my vendor is not my competitor.
Not piss off other manufacturers, because Fiber Channel, I would assume that's a fairly narrow market, right? You don't want to try and theoretically compete against Cisco or Juniper or any of those guys.
It's also a shrinking market. For many, many years now, Fiber Channel market has been shrinking, and it's been going all to iSCSI, and it's the same thing as with InfiniBand, right? It was a thing, but now it's not anymore. And that's just what doesn't make sense to me. They want the shrinking market stuff that's slowly going to die, but they don't want the growing market stuff that's making money. It doesn't make sense. Corporate policies.
I don't know. I mean, look at it as, I don't know, a 12-year plan, a 15-year plan. We're going to make a ton of money. We're going to make $1 billion every year just selling Fiber Channel for the next 10 or 12 years or 15 years or whatever with zero work. Well, I'm not saying zero work, right? But their overhead, since they're putting Broadcom chips and all this infrastructure, the price is going to be really right for them, and they can sort of engineer it just the way they want. I don't know. I see it as sort of a smart move. If you can actually get a good buyer for the rest of that infrastructure, it kind of subsidizes the cost that you had to put into all this stuff. So I don't know. I just see it as them putting cash in their pockets really quick, and it's a good 10-year cash grab. You know, if they're not interested in diversifying their portfolio with an IP piece, you know, routing and wireless and all that stuff.
It could have been interesting, though, if Broadcom themselves would make the chips and have the internal know-how and all the, you know, just deep-level knowledge of the chips themselves, and if they could even manufacture different chips specifically for their needs, and now they have a solid, even wireless and routing switching platform as well. It could have been some nice things came out of that, but not going to happen, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, it's sort of, I can kind of see what Mike's saying. You know, don't piss off your existing customers that you have that you're selling all these chips to. Right?
Oh, yeah, but I get that as well.
Yeah.
But
you're already making tons of bank off of that.
Could have been and all that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so something new in the MikroTik world. I guess it's not too terribly new. The Hex version 3, they put that guy out not too long ago. I know Andrew Thrift has been talking about it like crazy, the chipset, and how excited he is to see it, and he hopes they roll it to all the different product lines, right? So it's, I guess it's still technically the RB750. They're calling it the Hex now, right? So this is...
It's, yeah, RB750GR3.
There you go.
So really it's free.
880 megahertz CPU with two cores, and so they're saying it's going to appear to have four threads total, which is a lot of power for that same footprint, right? It's the exact same size.
And same price.
Yeah, same price, the same $60-ish price, 256 megs of RAM. You can run all the meta routers you want, right, Thomas?
Oh, God.
full-size USB. I hate it when they stick those little mini USB things on there. It drives me crazy. Andrew Thrift, I think, has been doing some testing on the USB port. As far as the power syncing and all that stuff, I'll let him tell everybody. I guess in a nutshell, he's saying it's working so far. I'll let him give his two cents on that. It's got a micro SD card slot. I think they said it supports up to like a 128 gig card or something like that. Right?
Yeah.
That's pretty beefy. It's also got IPsec hardware acceleration, right? They're saying 450 megabits of throughput, but I guess that's that's two directions added together, right? So 225.
From what I've read, that works too.
Oh, the IPsec part. Yeah,
yeah, it works.
Yeah, from what we from a lot
which is actually funny that now a €40, $60 device has better IPsec performance than a CCR.
Mm.
Yeah.
So Alex has been
having $60 to get more performance than their $3,200 1072.
Yeah, I know Alex has been having some really large, reproducible problems with IPsec hardware offload on the CCR chassis, and he can easily reproduce it. And he's been working with MikroTik to try and get that resolved. He's been working for a while on it, and yeah, apparently this guy does better performing on that. It's interesting, right? And so in all their marketing for this, they keep talking about the dude, right? This thing is perfect for the dude. It's dude ready. Dude.
Nobody cares about the dude.
I think it should ship with a sticker that says dude inside.
Just say no comment on this.
Right? So if they're going ham on dude like this, it makes me think, are they getting ready to drop a new version of the dude? Are they adding some additional features? Right, there's always scuttlebutt.
I think we just need an episode on the dude. I'll just vent.
Yeah, where you vent. Yeah, yeah. It's very much a love hate relationship for a lot of people, and some people just love to hate it. But they could make it more functional. They could fix a lot of things that I think would make you not hate it, and maybe just, you know.
No.
Just.
Well, I really don't want to get into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just no. Just the way the dude is structured and the way they decided to make it and their philosophy around it. It's really, don't get me wrong, it's lovely for little small networks that want to have something within minutes. It's lovely for that. But the way it's currently, it can never be useful for any large-ish, like 50 plus devices or routers in it, it's already not usable.
Okay. So for
and
a little,
there are of course things MikroTik could do to make it usable, but I think it would require more effort than they are willing to put into it.
Hmm. Would you, if they fixed all those things, would you be willing to pay for the dude?
Well, there are better options already out there that are free and open source, so I don't think so.
The NetXMS stuff.
Exactly.
What if they made it to where it added a lot of really neato features and was just convenient for something quick and standalone that you had like 20 APs out at a place? Would you be willing to pay for a $20 license to throw it on a router board?
Still no. There is still better free and open source options.
You're so jaded. You've been burned too many times. I've been hurt.
it's not about that. It's I could forgive that they didn't develop it for 4 years and all of that. It's not like I have a hate relationship just because I want to hate it. It's that factually and the feature set and everything that goes into it. It's simply there are just better options out there that are free and open source.
Fair enough. So the
and
SD card.
With that, I will have to say goodbye.
Okay. Well, we're putting a bow on it anyway. We've hit the hour mark, and that's where we're trying to sort of keep them clean. So if you've got another 2 minutes, we can kill it. Cool?
All right.
So just wrapping it up, there's a lot of hardware stuff. We actually have stuff left over that we'll just carry on to the next one. A lot of it is mostly things Mike wants to see. So he's very vocal about those on Facebook, so I'm sure people already hear about it anyway. But in normal fashion, please keep contacting us. Contact at thebrotherswisp.com if you're an email guy. If you're not an email guy, you can hit Facebook. And again, that is Mike Hammett, always updating that content, keeping things fresh. If you comment on something, he's going to hit you back probably in 20 minutes or less. You know, he's always good for some discourse. If you have any...
Whether you want it or not.
Yeah, it's coming at you. Hold tight. But yeah. Also, any questions, comments, especially questions. Again, he put up a thing. We're looking to try and do kind of a question and answer sort of show. I really like those. I think it's interesting. I think at the next MUM, that's what we should do. We should just have everybody get up instead of do a presentation. We're all just sitting up there and say, ask us questions, and just do like a big Q&A sort of thing. I think that would be really funny until somebody asks us an opinion question. And then it's going to get hairy real quick.
Then we're just all going to get banned from the months.
No. It would be fun. It would be really fun. I think that would be interesting. So a question and answer thing. I would love to see that. Mike, if people want to contact you out on the interwebs, how would they do that?
Facebook seems pretty convenient. Although I've been trying to not go on Facebook much this week because it would be a big time.
All the political stuff. Yeah.
There's lots of things going on Facebook, and it's just I know it's not worth my time to discuss anywhere, and so I try not to go on, and I still go on it. I go on. I'm scrolling down. I find a post I don't like. All right, close the app. Moving on. I can't be arguing.
All right, so if you're looking for him on Facebook, it's going to be Mike Hammett or The Brothers Wisp on Facebook. That's really him. We all see it, but it's really Mike. Thomas Kernack, if people are going to catch you on the internet, how would you prefer them to do that?
Facebook, email, LinkedIn, just Google for my name. I'm fairly easy to find.
All right, jump over to unimus.net, find him there.
Yes, please do.
Absolutely. Amazing backup software. You can find me at gregsoul.com. Very original naming there, of course. I'm going to be looking at all the Brothers Wisp stuff as well. Grab me on LinkedIn if you're interested. Maybe some new stuff coming up soon. You never know. Again, questions, comments, anything else you want to throw at us, please do. And thanks, everybody.